For South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I'm Josh Heyer, and you're listening to the In the Moment Arts Podcast. Each week, In the Moment with Lori Walsh brings you news and arts coverage from around the state. You can listen live at 11 a.m. Central, 10 Mountain on SDPB Radio, or ask that smart speaker to play SDPB. If you listen to In the Moment on Mondays, you've heard our weekly segment, Monday Mindset. It's where Lori sits with author, encourager, entrepreneur, Melissa Johnson. This Monday, the two concluded an ongoing series they have been doing focused on what's called the seven mindsets. This week, we thought it would be cool to take those seven separate segments, each focused on a mindset, and package them into one special podcast for you. So without further ado, enjoy.
All right. I have heard about the two mindsets, the fixed and the growth. You say there's seven.
Seven. Exactly. So this author, Jeff Waller, he's come up with seven specific mindsets they found that are common among highly successful people. So they really profiled a lot of highly successful people and thought, what are their commonalities? What are the personality traits that they all share? And they're studying these highly successful people to help our students connect and aspire and achieve in similar ways. So pretty great, right?
Right.
What's fascinating to me, though, is even though he's created this theory with students in mind, I think that it's great for all of us. I think it's not just students that can benefit from this, but really everybody.
Particularly because many of us didn't have that growing up.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? Some of us missed that in school and it would have been valuable to us then. And it's still valuable to us now.
Right. I just don't think they even talked about it in school years ago. And as we sort of come into this new era where we're understanding how important mindset is and the attitudes and the beliefs that shape us, I think it is something that's coming more to the forefront of not only, academia, but just really every area of our lives.
All right. What are the seven?
Well, okay. So seven of them right here. So the first one is everything is possible. Second one is passion first. Number three is we are all connected. Number four, 100% accountable. Number five is attitude of gratitude. Number six is live to give. And number seven is the time is now. I love these. So the obvious things about the seven mindsets is that they're all internal, right? None of them are coming from outside sources. We can spend time and energy putting others in charge of our success or our failures or, our successes or using them as an excuse if we failed, right? I think we can all kind of get into the habit of doing that. But really at the heart of it, we're the ones who are determining our own outcome. And I love that they're giving this power to students. They're giving this power to children at a young age and just teaching them that we are the ones responsible for our own lives.
Which can be pretty empowering because it means you have control that maybe you didn't realize that you had. Now, we acknowledge you can't control every situation that happens to you, but you can control your mindset.
Absolutely. My friend John Gordon, in his book, The Energy Bus, he uses the equation E plus P equals O. And that's the events that happen to you plus your perception of those events will equal your outcome. So E plus P equals O. And so many times you see that. I know I've used the story before of seeing a news story where when they had the flooding in Yankton a few years ago, and it was, and this has been some years back now, but I just remember specifically watching a news story and on one channel seeing someone say, our home is gone, everything that we own, we have nothing left. And I flipped the channel and this different coverage, but same story. And they were interviewing someone different. And she said, you know what? Our pets are okay and our family's okay. We have everything that we could need. Mm. And so I think about the difference between we have nothing left to we have everything we need.
And the metaphor of switching the channel, how quickly you went from one mindset to the other.
Absolutely.
It's maybe useful as well. Tell us about this first one. Everything is possible.
Yeah. So in this curriculum with the seven mindsets, everything is possible. So I love that. You know, we can say that everything is possible and it sounds like this rallying cry, but how deeply do we really believe that? That's what I want to challenge us on. When we believe everything is possible, that belief truly encourages us to dream bigger and to think bigger and to embrace our creativity, whatever that looks like. And then not only that, but to expect great results from that.
Yeah. All right. How do we get started? How do we do that?
Well, it's, again, it's easy to say, but it's not always automatic to do. Believing everything is possible is, it's really an exercise in moving past what we do know and giving way to the things that we don't know. And what we don't know can be kind of scary, right? It's easy, and we usually become accustomed to saying, well, this will never work because of X, Y, and Z. It's so easy for us to think of the reasons that something won't work. But what if instead we accepted that since we don't yet all have all the information, we don't have all the information in any given situation, it's all in the future, right? We could instead think of the ways that things could go right, the things that are possible. Instead of why it wouldn't be possible, what about why it is possible?
So a lot of what if. What if, finish that sentence, yeah. A lot of what if, that's useful.
What if, what if, what if, what if, what if this big change I'm going through at work is the worst thing in the world? Oh my goodness. No, wait. What if this change at work opens up a different opportunity that I've never seen existed before? Hmm. What if we have to move because of my, spouse's job? What if I meet great new people?
Yeah. I had this problem when my daughter went to college. What if we're not as close as we are anymore? And then being able to shift that to what if we're closer than ever before, but in this new way? Because that's the second has really been true as she becomes even more of an adult. Mm-hmm. It's like, what if this is about to get better?
Right.
Yeah.
As a side note, P.S., like, isn't it so cool to see your kids grow up and become their own person? And you just realize that you've poured into them everything that you can, but they're becoming their own person, and it's so cool.
Yeah, what if her idea of the person she wants to be is even better than the idea of what I wanted her to be?
Yes.
Like what I had imagined for her, what if what she imagined was even better?
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm reading this book right now. It's called The Big Leap, okay? And it's by Gay Hendricks is the name of the author. But I love this quote from there I read last week. It says, when we cling to the notion that something is not possible, we are arguing for our limitations. Mm. Whoa. Mm. And when we argue for our limitations, we get to keep them.
Just give that a moment to breathe.
Right. That one was huge for me. Yeah. If I think something is not possible, I'm arguing for my limitations. And when I argue for my limitations, I get to keep them. Hmm. What if we argued for possibility instead?
Yeah. All right. So we're challenging ourselves, challenging listeners, to spend the week not arguing for your limitations. Instead, let's challenge to think about that mindset of everything is possible, or at the very least, more is possible than you realize was possible.
More is possible than you realize.
If you're not ready to go to everything is possible, maybe you can go to more is possible.
And in changing that mindset to everything is possible, you were absolutely right on. It's a lot of what if questions. What if this? What if that? What if this? What if that? And just train yourself to do that. And I know you can change your mindset. Today, we're going to look at the notion of passion first. And passion is one of my favorites, I think, because people vary greatly on their level of their understanding of passion, what passion means, if they know what their passion is, et cetera. And, maybe people don't even know if they have a passion. I know that's right. That's one common thing is I love the author Elizabeth Gilbert. She talks about doing a speaking engagement where she talked incessantly about passion and find your passion and grab that passion. And she talks about how she got an email after the event. And this woman said, after seeing you, I was so looking forward to seeing you. And after seeing you, I'm more discouraged than I ever have been before.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I know, which was obviously not what she was going for. Right. Yeah. And, this woman said, you talk about passion and here I am sitting in the seventh row and you can tell me to find my passion, but I'm no closer to finding what it is. Mm. And so it makes me feel like I'm failing once again. And so I love how she really reframed it, Liz Gilbert did. And she said, instead of talking about finding your passion anymore, I tell people to think about what makes them curious. And that curiosity will lead you to your passion. And she said, what makes you curious? What makes it when you hear something or when you read something or when you learn something new, it makes you just kind of turn your chin a quarter of an inch and go, I want to know more about that. And she talks about how that curiosity will lead you to your passion.
Right. So connecting with passion has never been hard for me. And when I'm thinking about passion and what you were just saying there about Liz Gilbert, I think back to, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. And I wanted this piece of art from a gallery. And I would go into this gallery every week and I would look at this wonderful piece of art that I wanted to take home, but I didn't have money for it. Mm-hmm. And I remember the gallery representative talking to me and she said, you're the lucky one. And I was like, I'm not feeling very lucky because I can't bring this home. And sure. I had a friend at the time who had saved up a considerable amount of money to buy something. He couldn't pick anything. And so I would sit and gaze at this picture. And she said, no, you're the lucky one. I see people like him every day who come in and they have tons of resources to spend on art, but they don't know which one they connect with.
Wow.
She said, you've made your connection. And if you want to come up with the money for this piece of art, you will.
Absolutely.
So just keep coming in and looking at it as long as you want. And
my goodness.
That painting hangs above my piano in my living room.
Does it
today.
Really?
I took it home with me when I left Hawaii. And again, the mindset shift there of saying, but for people who are struggling to find their passion, starting with curiosity is a very gentle invitation.
Absolutely. Oh, I love that illustration. And I love to know that painting is hanging hanging in your home right now. I love it. You know, they talk about passions being the thing that you will put other things aside for, right? The thing that you will fight for and the thing that you will put other things aside for. And though I've read that a lot, I almost have to say I argue with that because sometimes I think that people fit their passions in around the other stuff, around the responsibilities. Now, I just have to wonder, how long did it take you to save up that money and to go, okay, this is worthy.
3 months.
3 months.
3 months.
3 months of just dedicated effort to get that done.
Yep. 3 months.
I love it.
Gave myself a deadline. So passion is important in the sense that what happens if we don't pursue our passions, if we aren't listening to that curiosity?
Yeah, what happens if we don't pursue our passions? Yeah. I think it comes out in ways of stress. I used to have a therapist friend who would say it comes out sideways. You know, when you're not pursuing your passion, when you're not doing that thing you were meant to do, it will find its way out, and usually not in really great ways, right? When you are purposed to do something, you've got to find a way to do it. So I know I just touched on that sometimes we let it go to the back burner, right? And when you find what that is, you just have to find a way to fight for it. You have to find a way to, whether that means if you're a writer, whether that means getting up at 4 a.m. to do that writing, or whether it means staying up later at night and sacrificing, whether sacrificing on sleep, sacrificing on, time with friends, you'll find a way to pursue those passions, or it's important that you do, rather.
Yeah. Who is it that says creativity is a beast? If you don't feed it, it will eat you. The destructive potential for unfulfilled passion.
Once again, talking about Elizabeth Gilbert, I love the book Big Magic. I know you and I have discussed that one before. And a quote in there, she says, if I'm not actively creating something, then chances are I'm destroying something, myself, a relationship, or my own peace of mind.
That resonates with a lot of people.
Oh,
we have a lot of artists on In the Moment, a lot of people who come, or scientists, you hear it from scientists too, who are researching, some enormous discovery. And I'll often ask them, like, where do you find the time? What's your process? How do you, that 4 a.m. in the morning or 5 a.m., you never want to hear them say it, but you know it's coming when they look at you and they say, I get up at 5, or, I don't watch TV, or I don't use my phone after 6 o'clock at night, whatever. They have these things that they do that show their commitment.
Right.
So understanding what your passions are clearly multi-dimensional.
Yes.
So for people who are passionate about so many things, what do you think? Because you have a business, baking, writing, speaking, all these things that you're passionate. How do you create some sort of, I'm not sure the word balance is fair here, but how do you create some sort of tapestry where you can explore those passions When there's more than one.
Right. I think it's just important to find space for whatever it is that you need to pursue at that moment. And if you listen to yourself really intimately, your body will tell you, your soul will tell you what it is that you need to create. So for me, sometimes it is writing. I know that the space I'm in today, I need to sit down and write. I wrote this morning and I need to write when I leave here today. I know that a couple weeks ago, I was very, very much in a painting phase where I needed to get my fingers into some paint and onto a canvas and really do that thing. But yeah, it's a little bit like finding a work-life balance, right? Like pursuing your passion projects, whatever they are. But, you know, our mindset today that we're really working towards is passion first, whatever that is, work and find that space to put that passion first.
And you see that from entrepreneurs across the state of South Dakota, these people who have these really vibrant businesses that all began with a passion for something.
For something.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So whatever that is, I would just encourage you to make space, find a way, pursue that passion and put it first.
Talk about connected. We are all connected.
Yes, definitely. Well, connectedness is a feeling of being joined together, or the dictionary definition, having a particular affinity for a person or a group. It's the joining together of things.
What does that mean?
Well, it means we are all connected mindset is one where we really understand that all things are made up of energy and all that energy is connected. So essentially, there's no difference between me and you right now. We are connected. There's no difference between you and the tree outside. We're all vibrating with energy and connected by that energy. The we are all connected mindset is one where we understand that for me to hurt you means essentially I'm hurting myself.
So not something that's necessarily thrumming through our consumer culture on certain days, but it's not a new concept, is it? This has been around for a long time.
Right. It might sound a little new agey and things like that, but no. In fact, I enjoyed looking this up. The poet Ralph Waldo Emerson, he lived from 1803 to 1882. He supported this theory and widely believed we should try to live a simple life in harmony with nature and with others. He described, he described currents of a universal being circulating through him. And, one of his quotes, I am part or particle of God.
So we are beautiful. Not Lakota people. That's not our lived experience. So I can't speak to that. But certainly I have, when we talk to people about Lakota traditional values, this theory of connectedness has been around long before Emerson, most
absolutely.
Likely.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yes. Another piece that I really enjoyed, I'm enjoying these segments so much, these conversations, because I'm enjoying researching on my own and looking things up and learning as I go as well. And I learned about a conversation in India, in the Hindu culture. There's a word called Genshai, kind of like gunshy, but Genshai, right? And it's a Hindu word that means never treat another person in a manner that would make them feel small. And the story that went along with that illustration when I was reading about it, he said, if I give a coin to a beggar on the street, again, this was a kind of an Indian proverb. He said, if I give a coin to a beggar on the street, but I just give it to him, I've done nothing. Like, I haven't really done anything positive is kind of what he was saying. He said, but if I get on my knees and I look him in the eye, he said, then that coin becomes love. And I have then given him love. And, I just loved that. Yeah. So I wrote that word down when I was researching for this conversation.
Also the Christian tradition of asking Jesus, who is my neighbor? What is the most important commandment? Trying to sort of trap him into picking a commandment and love thy neighbor.
Yeah, who's my neighbor?
Yeah.
Everyone.
That connectivity.
Everyone.
God, absolutely. Why are we so disconnected?
Oh, my goodness. You know, there's 8 billion people in our world. 8 billion people in our world, and we are at a lonelier time in our culture than we ever have been before. But connectedness can take us from loneliness to a life of sharing and love and powerful powerful connections. It's really is. I mean, it's kind of mind-blowing to think about all the resources we have available to us, and that when we use them correctly, when we truly do connect with people, which is, you know, looking people in the eye and loving them and understanding that we are all one, we are all connected, we have so many resources available to us.
Yeah. We're all connected, and yet it's so easy to step off that path.
Right, absolutely. Yeah. And not only do we have resources available to us, we have resources to give. Mm. We have love, connection, energy to give to others as well. And it's a powerful thing in our world when we use it right.
All right. This is something that comes naturally to you. You said last week that when you, you know, measure your strengths, connectedness is something that rises to the top. So it's very intuitive for you.
It is. It very much is. I believe that there is a lesson in everything. There's a lesson. There's a reason we're here at this moment. There's a reason that my path has crossed with a person on, I'm working on a writing piece right now. I don't know yet if it's going to be a book, a chapter in a book, an essay. I'm not sure what it's going to be, but about a woman that I sat across from in the subway in New York City in July of 2014, and how her life has intersected with mine ever since then. And she and I spoke not a word, but I know that there's a reason. I know that there's a reason that I sat across from her. So
for people who don't come to connectedness as naturally as you do, what are some of your tips to say? Is it just a matter of slowing down? Mm. Is it paying attention and having an awareness? Like, how do we cultivate a mindset of connectedness?
Mm. Well, first of all, cultivating that mindset does come, as you said, from slowing down. I'm a big one for eye contact, looking people in the eye. I think when you look people in the eye, you can see a little bit more behind their eyes rather than, I mean, we're in such a texty world. We're looking at our phones and we're looking at our computer screens. And but when you look someone in the eye, when you notice their body language, when you really listen for the things that they're not saying, that's when connection forms.
What is next for us here?
The next one we're going to talk about is 100% accountable, the 100% accountable mindset.
Happy January.
Happy January. Absolutely.
All right. Accountability is not always a fun word.
You know, it's not. I think people view accountability with a negative context and somewhat maybe of a negative mindset, but accountability can be a really good thing. So there are two types of accountable that we're going to talk about today, and there's accountability to others and accountability to self.
Oh, all right. So
and yes, today we're going to focus primarily on that accountability to self. So 100% accountable means essentially taking ownership of your stuff, whatever your stuff is, whether it's your strengths, whether it's your weaknesses, whether it's, you know, some challenges that you've been through, situations you've been through, goals you're working towards, your strengths and your shortcomings. 100% accountable means knowing that no one is responsible for your life besides you.
Okay. Is that always true though? Because it sure feels like sometimes things happen to us that are really out of control.
Absolutely. So
out of our control.
Out of our control.
And out of control.
Yes. We cannot always control the things that happen to us. We can't control the events that happen, but we can control our mindset. You know, in John Gordon's teachings, he talks about that, that equation E plus P equals O. Your events plus your perception determines your outcome. Hmm. Right. And so we can always choose our mindset. 100% accountable takes you from victim mentality, and it really does put you in the driver's seat. It helps you identify the things you can control, even when things might feel like they're a little bit out of your grasp.
All right. Help break it down. Tell us what it looks like. Give us an example.
Well, I mean, people are doing New Year's resolutions right now, right?
Yep.
And are you a New Year's resolution person?
That depends.
Okay. All right.
I love the turning of the year. I love looking. I like setting goals for the new year. Not necessarily a traditional resolution, but I like to set goals this time of year. Yeah, it's a fresh start.
Absolutely. So I am the same way. I don't make New Year's resolutions, but I do look ahead at what are the ways that I could have made last year better. And sure. How do I want to break it down to make those things happen this year? And many times the reasons that are, whether you call it a resolution or a goal, many times the reasons those things don't work out is because of self-sabotage. Yeah. We can end up sabotaging our own goals even when no one else has anything to do with it. A lot of that can be brought down to distraction. It can be brought down to self-doubt, but we self-sabotage ourselves a lot. And so with 100% accountability, we're showing care for our own goals and dreams, actually setting boundaries with ourselves.
Mm. All right. So 100% accountability is an act of self-care.
It is definitely.
Which I think flips it on its end for some people who mm-hmm. maybe don't love the idea of accountability as a word.
You know, I love that you said that you called it self-care. There's an article that I've seen it posted on Facebook, but it's kind of going around right now. And it talks about self-care is not about bubble baths. It's not about getting a massage. Self-care, I love the line. It says self-care is sometimes the ugliest thing you have to do.
Mm.
And that means going to the gym when you don't feel like it. Or that means balancing your checkbook when you don't know what the outcome is going to be, but actually right. sitting down and doing it,
yeah.
Preparing healthy meals instead of hitting the drive-through. That's accountability to yourself, and that's caring for your goals. That's yeah. really what self-care is.
Going to the dentist, filling mm-hmm. out your will. I mean, some of the things that you don't necessarily want are acts of self-care.
Definitely.
You still get the bubble bath, though.
You we'll still get the bubble bath, and if somebody could book a massage for me, that'd be really great.
So, Liz, you mentioned being accountable to someone else, and that can be something people get tripped on.
Right. You know, I used to think of accountability. In fact, it was something that I really wanted to explore and write. Like, how do you draw the line between grace and accountability?
Mm.
Because if you're a person of faith and a person who has a lot of compassion towards other humans, like I do, I always want to extend grace whenever possible. But at some point, you have to hold people accountable for their behavior. And so I've always felt like the word grace on the left-hand side, the word accountability on the right-hand side, and there's a line drawn in the middle. And at what point do you figure out where to draw that line?
Yeah.
It was explained to me, actually, John Gordon explained it in a different way, that grace is on the left, accountability is on the right, and it's a line that extends between the two, and it connects the two words. So it's on a continuum. It's not a line in the sand. It's really a continuum. And that accountability is really telling somebody, I love you so much that I know you're capable of more. Holding someone accountable is not a negative. It's not a punishment. It's not a criticism. It's really knowing that they're capable of more, capable of better. And so whether that's somebody else or yourself.
Yeah. High expectations can be a very good thing in that context when you look at it like that. Well, I hope that we've maybe changed a few people's perspectives on the word accountability in general.
Yes, I want people to take away that 100% accountable is not a negative. It's really a powerful mindset. It is. And it's a standard you can hold yourself and others to because you know that you're worth it and because they're worth investing in.
Yeah, I love that. All right, so let's talk about having an attitude of gratitude, because we touched on this in an earlier episode, and even at that time we made on-the-spot gratitude lists.
During the holidays, we've been more keenly focused on gratitude. The holiday season really does bring that out in people, right? And the giving and the celebrating, but it's true that not, you know, the holidays aren't necessarily a happy time for everyone. And even right. as we move forward into this new year, not every day is a really great day. Can we just be honest about that? Let's be honest about that. In fact, you know, we're gripped by the cold months here. One of my friends says January is the longest 6 weeks of winter. We're gripped by the cold months, and sometimes it can be challenging to keep a positive perspective. No matter how hard you try, sometimes circumstances or happen or people come into your path that they happen into your day and they can really, really bring some challenge. So in fact, I have to tell you that as I was, digging into this, doing some research, typing up our bullet points and our things that we wanted to be sure to cover, I overwrote the document that I was working on, Attitude of Gratitude. And I had to really kind of grit my teeth and go, that's right, Attitude of Gratitude. And then Lori, I did it again. And I'm telling you what, it was a challenge to choose my attitude and choose my mindset about that. But at some point you just have to laugh about it.
That is a cosmic intervention to see if you really...
Do you believe what you're saying here? Exactly.
So what do we do with that then?
We can actually retrain our brains to focus on attitude. We can begin to retrain our brain to look for the gratitude in all things with daily gratitude practices. And, even in a situation like that, I can look back at the lesson that I learned from it. And I can look at that with gratitude because I can guarantee you that that will not happen to me again. So I'm grateful for the lesson I learned, but our brains are like a muscle. And so if you think of muscles and trying to build your arm strength, you work by adding a little more weight each time and by doing repetition, right? Lots and lots of repetition. So if we're, for instance, focused on working those arm muscles repetitively until they do what we want them to do, we can do the same thing with our brains.
Yeah.
It's only with repetition that we effectively build that gratitude muscle.
All right. So let's talk about some of your favorite ways to practice that gratitude.
Gratitude journaling is the one I go to every single time. It is my go-to. I think gratitude journaling is such a wonderful way to look back at how far you've come.
Yeah.
And to see the things that you really have to be grateful for, but the things that you were grateful for 2 years ago, they may or may not be the same things you're grateful for today. And so again, I think it's such a great way to look back at progress over the course of time. I also love gratitude meditations. Do you use apps on your phone?
I do have the Calm app.
I like that one. Yeah. I love that
Isn't
one.
Isn't that nice?
It is so good. It is so good. And, a gratitude and prayer walk is another thing. We talk about walking for exercise, walking for fitness, walking for purpose. But what about walking just to be thankful for the legs that you have to move you and for the trees that are around you and for the clothes you have to keep warm? When you focus on those things over and over repetitively, that gratitude muscle grows.
I did this when I dropped my daughter off for college. Just walked around the campus when I had that moment to myself, and instead of sort of being sad, I was just grateful for all the places that I knew she was going to discover and the places that she was going to go and the steps she was going to sit on and the bus that was going to take her to the airport to bring her home. And it just was a very, therapeutic kind of moment for me to not only remind myself that these resources were there for her and that she would find them, but to be grateful for all the work that those people at that university do to take care of all these students who are coming from all over the world to study there. So a gratitude walk doesn't have to be, no one knew I was doing it. They just thought I was walking.
And what you're talking about as well as you're walking is your mindset. Now, you had a choice. You could have been really sad about the fact that she was at college and you weren't going to see her. This past Christmas was the first Christmas that I've spent without my middle daughter.
Mm.
First one ever. I've always had all of my kids around me at Christmas. But she's getting married this June. And so she was out in lead with her fiance's family. And instead of being sad that they weren't here, I was so grateful for technology. We were able to FaceTime with them on Christmas morning, and we were able to open presents together and be together, even if we weren't in the same zip code. And then I was so grateful for Connor and for his family and for the fact that he lives on this side of the state. So I get him most of the time, and his family's such a great family. It's, and it shifted my mindset completely to focus on all the things that I was grateful for.
And you can be sad too. But then it was almost a break from that sadness and that heaviness and that great mindset shift.
Yeah.
What's the awesome list?
I
want to know what an awesome list
is. Yes. Well, I was just going to say that sometimes with gratitude journaling or gratitude lists, sometimes I can even start to feel a little stagnant in that.
Sure. Yeah.
And you find yourself writing the same things over and over. And so my awesome list is, as I write something, I'll just, it might sound a little silly, but in my head, I'll go, that's awesome. That's awesome. I got to make, you know, vegetable soup over Christmas. That's awesome. Yeah. I got to work out at a place I love on Saturday. That's awesome. And when you do that, there is just, again, some shift that happens within yourself that causes you to focus on not only how awesome it is, but how grateful you are for those things.
Right. And we spend so much time on this show, on NPR, in the world, you know, wherever you're getting your news and information, focusing on some really important stuff. But some of that stuff can get kind of heavy. Mm-hmm. And so this mindset work has really been helpful, I think, for all of us here on the show to take a break, too, from the important responsibilities that we have, and also to say, hey, this is awesome. We can also talk about, it's Monday, let's be grateful.
Yes.
You know, for some of the things that we have, yeah.
And here's why it's so important. As you talk about some of the things that we have swirling around our world, and we can't control those things that are swirling around in our world, but I love the example that John Gordon shares in one of his books, and it's been shared multiple times in different forums and different arenas, but I love the illustration of the two dogs that are inside of us. And the two dogs that are inside of us, we have a positive dog and we have a negative dog. And one is happy, one is calm, one is filled with peace, one is warring within itself, one is negative. It's, you know, just a little more on the dark side. We all have two dogs within us. And so there's an illustration where, you know, someone goes to the wise man and says, well, I have these two dogs and I feel like they're warring within me. Which one wins? And the wise man says, the one you feed. And it's the one you feed. So you can choose to feed it with all of that swirling stuff that's going on around us, right. Or we can choose to feed it with gratitude.
So let's talk about Live to Give, because this is another, conversation that I think is important to talk about year round, because mm-hmm. we've just finished this giving season and the mindset should be fresh in everyone's mind, but still a challenge.
Right. But what if we could live that philosophy all year round? And yeah. that's really our goal. When we think of giving, many times what springs to mind are things like making donations to a nonprofit, which again is sort of our end of year philosophy, right? Or giving to someone in need, maybe putting something in the Salvation Army red kettles. I know
sure.
we're talking a lot about the holidays, but again, that is when we think of giving so much. Buying gifts, giving gifts, but the act of giving and essentially the act of generosity itself is about so much more. It's about right. so much more than just giving.
Monetarily.
Know.
It's not just about this monetary giving that we're talking about.
Right. No, we're talking about being generous and giving of the gifts and the talents you have, the giving of your time, in addition to the traditional giving sense that we tend to think of. In fact, giving of time is the greatest gift you can give someone, because it's something you can never get back. You can make mm-hmm. more money, or you can buy another gift, but you can never get time back. And so time is the most generous gift that you can give somebody. In fact, I'm going to go out on a limb here. And hear me out, but I'm going to say that a mindset of live to give is actually a little selfish on the part of the giver.
You're going to have to explain that.
Right. Well, when we give, this was really interesting as I was kind of researching for this conversation and doing some digging. When we give, there are a few things that happen inside of us that make us even happier than the receiver. So first of all, our brain releases oxytocin, dopamine, serotonin. It's like the trifecta of joy chemicals. And all three of those are released in our brain when we give to someone. Improved gut health is actually a benefit of this. And yep, you heard that right, gut health, right? When we give thanks to the vagus nerve, it's stimulated, okay? So the vagus nerve is often called the caretaking nerve. It's the nurturing nerve. It's responsible for so many things, including digestion. So really, our gut health can be improved by giving. Can you believe that?
I want some of that.
I want some of that, exactly. Third thing, another benefit is spiritual growth, because giving is an act of selflessness. And, you know, even though I'm talking about all these great things that we get out of it ourselves, and I, you know, facetiously said it was a little bit selfish, but no, it's a selfless act when we give, and we grow spiritually when we give because we have faith in a good outcome from sure. whatever it is that we're giving. And then finally, it establishes deeper connections. There are mirror neurons that fire. So when I'm looking at you and you're looking at me and we are in a conversation, we're matching one another's body language. We have mirror neurons that are firing. And so when we watch people receive what we have given, we're actually receiving the benefit of that right back. It just makes us feel good and our connection deepens when we give.
I bet people listening to this on the radio can imagine our hand gestures in the studio and just the way that we're sort of start mirroring each other as we talk about positive and mindset shifts. And so it really is better to give than to receive.
Well, and just, you know, going a little bit deeper on those mirror neurons, if you think about it, like when I'm smiling, you're smiling.
Right.
When you're smiling, I smile back. Like we mirror what we see. And so when you are giving to someone, you do get that benefit right back at you.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. I had someone tell me once that it's, you know, one of the challenges of being a journalist is that you have to keep a really neutral face and, you know, not sort of give anybody's facial feedback. And I was like, oh, I hope that's not the rule because I can't do that at all.
Certainly that's not it in radio. In radio, we can do whatever we want, right?
And like, if I had to control my facial expressions, I don't know. That wouldn't be something.
Exactly.
Right. So this is healthy and it's powerful for us as well. Can you give us an example of what this looks like and feels like in your life?
You know, I just asked the question at work the other day with my whole team, what was the best gift you either gave or received at Christmas? And it was so cool that many, many of the responses were more about what they gave someone else rather than what they received. So again, right. It does feel so good to give. I think about something that I received years ago was one of my greatest gifts, which was, and again, this is not a monetary thing at all, but my aunt was staying at my house and she found my Bible laying out and she couldn't sleep during that night. And so she found post-it notes and she stuck post-it notes all through my Bible of each verse that meant something to her and what it was that meant something to her. There's even things like the verse that the pastor read when my grandfather was passing away. And it is tattered and worn. And it is, I mean, that's maybe the greatest gift I've ever received.
Wow.
Yeah.
My dad used to clean off my car when I was in high school. Mm. He would shovel a little path to my car, and then he would start the engine and he would scrape the windows, partially because he knew I wasn't going to do it very well and he wanted to keep me safe, but partially as an act of love to me. And today I do that for my daughter. And I think it feels better to have done that for her and to scrape those windows and to make sure her windshield wipers are, and I feel really good giving that to her, partially because, so it also, it continues, you'll remember those post-it notes in your Bible and do that for someone else someday or do something that makes sense.
Yes.
You know, that giving, you know, cupcakes, it's all about.
It's all about
your whole life.
It's all about joy and giving and making someone else smile with cupcakes. Yeah. Another thing that we do in our family is we put on cold winter days like this, here's a little pro tip for you guys, right? On cold winter days, we put blankies in the dryer just warm them up a little bit. And warm blankets, there's just nothing better,
right?
Just nothing better.
It's those little things that didn't cost anything.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. So that's another one of the mindsets that they found that was very common among highly, highly successful people was a live to give mindset. Yeah. Somebody who just wanted to be generous with their money, with their time, with even their body language and their eye contact and things like that. That's generosity right there.
And you have to wonder if sometimes when you feel depleted after the season of giving that, if you had that mindset all year long, that when you got to the point where it was time to give people presents for their birthday or for Christmas, that it wouldn't have the same pressure that it might if you haven't seen them all year.
Right.
Or you haven't been in that space all year, that all of a sudden you get sort of ratcheted into that space really quickly and then dumped out of it when it's over.
Yes.
If this is just who you are and how you live, it becomes a natural expression of your mindset and not a to-do list, and martyrdom that ends up being self-harm.
Giving should not be something, a situation of pressure. It should be an act of joy.
All right, let's talk to me about what is on our conversation for today, because it's the time is now.
The time is now, absolutely. You know, we've gone through this list of seven specific mindsets that author Jeff Waller found were common among these highly successful people, right? But I'm guessing, or if I'm going to keep growing and becoming better, if I'm going to make this my best year yet, then I need to fully understand and commit to doing these things to grow myself now. There's no time to delay. I've got goals that I set. You and I a couple weeks ago talked about different goals that we've set. And, you know, tomorrow is not the time to start working towards those goals. The time is now.
All right. And everybody, that when we say successful people, that's not, there's not a one definition of success. Your definition of success and what you want is going to be different from mine. But everybody's got a dream or a desire in their heart. And we need to get on that.
Yeah. We need to jump on it right away. You know, there's an author that I follow named Laura Casey. She's got this Power Sheets goal planner that I've been working in this year. And with every package you buy from her company, I just love, I'm a big one for packaging, right? Marketing is kind of my deal. And I'm a big one for packaging. But with every package you buy from her company, she sends this little card. And it is a beautiful, frameable card. And it says, you know all those things you've always wanted to do? You should go do them.
Yeah.
Oh, and it's just so awesome when you open up a package from her and you see that card. And it's just your one little visual reminder that, yes, I should go do them. And not only should I go do them, but I should go do them right now. Yes.
And one of the things that as a writer, I remember hearing a lot in writers' conferences is, you know, next year at this time, you're going to be a year older. The book will be written or the book won't be written, but you'll still be a year older. So the time is now. You don't necessarily have as much time as you think.
Right. Yeah. There's a author, Jack Kornfield, wrote that in a book. He has this book that's a whole list of Buddha quotes. Mm-hmm. And it's actually misappropriated or miscredited as a Buddha quote or something like that. But it's the trouble is you think you have plenty of time, as he's just talking about kind of different philosophies. The trouble is you think you have plenty of time. Hmm. Yeah. You know, and it's true. Like, we never know when our time is up.
Sure.
So the time is now. And oftentimes we wait for someone else to give us the push we need. John Gordon talks all the time about you are the driver of your own bus. Stop letting other people drive your bus for you and understand that you are behind, you know, you're behind the steering wheel. You are choosing where it's going to go. And nobody just sits still, right? You've got to get in the bus and you've got to drive and you've got to go. So whether it's finishing a project or meeting a deadline or starting a brand new thing, whatever that thing is, the time is now. We can't wait for anybody else to either start or finish the chapter we're on right now.
Right. And that goes back to setting those goals and being accountable to them and making those plans. What happens if we're not making progress on something? How do we sort of evaluate that?
Yeah, you know, I think that many times we will look at something that we want and we'll identify like, I want to write a book. I want to write another book.
Yeah.
But how do you get there? And so one of the really important things is breaking those goals down or those dreams down into small measurable chunks. And one of my things that I set as a goal this year was to read 24 books this year. And I know there's people who do that in their sleep, right? I know there's people who do that all year long and they're like, she only set a goal for 24. But to me, I understand that 24 books is two per month. And I know that I can do two books per month without failing at that goal or without feeling like I'm falling behind.
And leaving room for the other things that you
and
want to be doing
room,
in your life.
Exactly. Yeah. And then, you know, July or August, I can stop and reevaluate because I know my benchmarks all the way along. And so I think that's a really important thing as you're setting goals as well, is to understand what your benchmarks are and the dates that you want to reach those benchmarks.
One of the things I like to think of is when we talk about the time is now, sometimes it really is as easy as just starting. Not always. I will grant you that. But sometimes if you have decided that that is the thing that you're going to do, that it is time to just take that step forward.
Just do it.
And just go for
just
it.
Do it.
Because
yes.
you don't necessarily have the time that you think you do.
Yeah. Did you set any goals this year? Anything you're working towards? Any dreams? Any thing that you want to share?
You know, this is an interesting one because as we talk about the time is now, one of the challenges in our family, I've been pretty open with my brother's cancer diagnosis. And 5 years ago now, my father died. And really since, and my stepsister died shortly thereafter when my brother was diagnosed with cancer. So we went through this period of time as a family where this idea that you don't have as much time as you think you do was in very stark relief.
Yes.
And so we lived with what was right in front of us in a healthy way because there were things that we had to deal with and there was an awareness and a maturity that we maybe didn't have before.
Sure.
But I also find that if I got... I shouldn't say I got obsessed with that because I didn't, but there is the time for me now is to also think about longevity.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of those goals and decisions that I need to make need to be decisions that are going to, I'm going to be glad that I made, should I make it to 90?
You know?
Because for a while they were just living in the, this might be the last 6 months. And I think a lot of people who go through, you know, critical illnesses or loss of loved ones have that experience where all of a sudden it's like, take that vacation and, you know, spend this time. And you can, if you're not careful, lose track of the long term and remember that life is also long and the decisions and the goals we set today to take care of ourselves, to live, to give, to be with our families will also be long term, will help in our longevity.
Right.
So for me, it's about the time is now, but it's also about the time is now to prepare for for longevity.
Ooh,
in
I
some
love
ways.
That.
They're
love
kind of
that.
Going together for me this year.
Yeah.
In an interesting and pretty healthy way.
Yeah, I love it. You know, I am in this goal planner I'm working in right now. There was a page that said, identify what will mean the most when you're 80, 90, or 100.
Right.
What do you want to be known for when you're 80, 90, or 100? And there were two columns. What will matter then? And what will not matter then? And I was working on that page. Actually, I recall very starkly, I was working on that specific page on the day after Christmas because I had gotten up and I was getting ready to go to work and I was getting ready to just do my day the way I do my day every day. And all of a sudden I sat back and I thought about it and I wrote, it will not matter if I have gone to work and worked one more day on December 26th, 2019. Now, granted, I have the ability and the flexibility to do that. I know that that's not realistic for everybody necessarily, but there are things like that that are just in our everyday that we get so wrapped up in the we get so wrapped up in just the routine and the rut of every day that we don't stop to ask ourselves, will this matter when I'm 80, 90, 100? And so instead, I stayed home with my daughter that day and I played ping pong and we did a puzzle and those are the things that I'll remember.
That's the show for this week. Thank you for joining us. If you have a story idea, send an email to moment@sdpb.org. For Lori Walsh, Steve Zwemke, and Chris Loffrey, I'm Josh Heyer. Thanks for listening.